All right, our study is Homes Jesus Visited, and we're trying to remind ourselves that one of the ways that the Lord identified himself with the human condition is to actually visit the places where people really live. And that's where our most real concerns take place, in our living rooms and under our roofs, where we interact with the people closest to us, where we share our hopes and dreams, where we meet our crises and try to renew ourselves for real life. And we've already discovered that the Lord was willing to go to all kinds of homes. And we've seen some of the lessons about faith in Him that come from that. Today, the home that we're studying is one where most of the events in this episode don't happen actually under the roof of this house. And yet, what is going on in a room in that house, if the house had rooms, is something that reaches all the way out to the middle of a huge crowd by the seashore, where Jesus has just returned across the Sea of Galilee to the Capernaum area. And it involves an important family in the community, but it involves a family that has maybe the worst kind of anxiety that any household could have. A child is Luke says, dying. And the father of this child, the parents of this child, with their urgent concern over the health of their little one, have to figure out, what are we going to do about this? And this is a household which has heard in Capernaum, which has heard something about this teacher named Jesus, what he's been able to do to help people. And they believe it enough that the father of this household leaves the bedside of his child and goes and seeks Jesus out in the crowd. And, well, that's the rest of the story here that we want to try to read. Mark chapter 5, and we'd like to read verses 21 through 43 in our in the beginning of our study today. Mark 5, verses 21 through 43. John Ewing. John leads singing, doesn't get to read scripture. We better. Is your voice good, John?
Well, reading will probably help it a little bit.
Okay. Well, in the interest of improving our singing today, John will read our scripture. Okay.
And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, so she may be made well and live." And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, and who had suffered much under many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus, and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I'll be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling, and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. And he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha Kumar, which means, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl got up and began walking. She was 12 years of age, and they were immediately overcome with anger. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat.
All right. Thanks, John. Having visited some houses over the years where people are struck by the kind of grief the Lord found in this one, and being at least a little bit acquainted with some of the emotions that surround an event like this, we can imagine, I think, in our mind's eye, what it might have been like. Although the practices of expressing grief in the Eastern world at the time maybe were more animated than what we have in Western culture, we still are familiar with the emotions that take place here. So I pointed out on your paper that if you look at the setting, and I have in mind verse 21 here with the setting, that Jesus has crossed in the boat from the other side, a great crowd is gathered about him, his ministry is unfolding, his teaching is being heard, the fame about his mighty works have spread. But when Jairus comes to him, what's on Jairus' mind? All right. Not the Lord's ministry, not the work of the church, so to speak, as we'd say it today, not what great success this teaching has heard, not what he's going to talk about next. None of that. Only his daughter. Now, does Jesus say, Jairus, we got big things going on here. You need to broaden your vision some. No, the Lord understood, as I put it on your paper, that when a man is fearing the worst in his own house, he's not able to think about much else than that. The Lord understands that, and he responds to it, and that's what this episode is about. And I've tried to kind of outline it based on what kind of man this Jairus is, but we'll do the class mostly with questions. So look first at Mark 5, verse 23. What do you notice about him, how he speaks of his daughter, and what reflects his tender concern for her here? Look at your Bible. All right, he calls her. It's impressive to me. This is my little daughter. My little daughter. Now look at Luke's record in Luke 8, verse 42, and tell me the other details we have about Jairus' little daughter, as he calls her.
Only daughter.
All right, first she's his only daughter. And what else? She's 12 years old. He still calls her his little daughter. And what else? Does Luke say? She's dying, all right, at the time. Now, you can imagine from those three details what Jairus has in mind when he says, it's my little daughter. She's precious to him on several levels. Not only on the personal individual, but it's his only daughter. She's 12. You have an idea that she's the apple of her daddy's eye when you read this passage, don't you? And that he's really deeply concerned over her. Now, I know that any relationship that has the power to bless, and certainly our children do bless us like that, also has the capacity to hurt. You know that, and I'm not talking about whose fault it is. We're not talking about choices necessarily. We're just talking about life. When you have somebody you love, if something happens that hurts them, it impacts you. You hurt, and if you look at what Jairus knew of the pain that's involved here, and I think it's interesting how the three records describe this. So, Summer, do you have Mark 5:23 open there? Keep that open. Debbie, would you get Luke 8:42? Barney, you get Matthew 9:18, if you would. I just want you to notice the different ways that these three writers phrase this. It's like they're looking at the same diamond from different angles almost here when you think about this. What does Jairus know about the pain involved in being a parent who has great concern on his mind? Okay. What does Mark say first off in verse 23 about her? She is at the point of, all right, my little daughter is at the point of death. That's how she was when he left the house. What does Luke say about her, verse 42 of chapter 8?
We had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she
was dying. All right, she was dying. So she's dying, and she's at the point of death. And then what does Matthew say about it, Matthew 9:18?
Well, he spoke these things to them. Behold, the ruler came and worshipped him, saying, my daughter has just died.
All right.
But come and lay your hand on her.
All right. Matthew writes based on, it's not as extended an account, so he just records the fact that she died while Jairus was there. All right. And so he knows what it's like to see the child sick, to see the child at the point of death, and to know that the child has died. All of that impacts him in this case here. Now notice in what Luke 8:41 says he actually asked Jesus to do. In Mark's account, Mark says that he said, come lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. That's, of course, what he wanted to happen. What he must have heard enough about what Jesus could do that he believed this could happen. He brings his request to the Lord and asks the Lord. I like, however, the way Luke says it. Luke 8:41. What does he actually ask Jesus to do? When you really boil it down, John?
Come to his house.
Come to my house. And I just think it's interesting that you have a father here making that request. He's not telling the Lord what to do as much as he is, just come to my house. That's, in other words, that's where his concern is at the moment. That's what's on his mind. And I think the lesson for us, you know, we want the Lord to be at our house. Now, obviously, I can't go to him physically and say, the Lord, come to my house. So how am I to make that request of my Lord? Pardon?
Coming to you.
All right, he needs to be in my life. Can you add to that any? What? How else can a father say, Lord, come to my house?
Prayer.
Our prayer would be one of the ways. The father needs to make prayer a part of his family's life. What else? All right, the way we live. Right. This man Jairus, you get the impression that he's a person of faith himself. And his daughter hasn't sent him to do this. He has chosen to do this. And so the leadership that's there in that way is important. All right, so first off, the tender, anything else that strikes you about his tender concern for his little daughter? All right, there's nothing more human than this. All right, now let's take another step in the story. He is a man, it seems to me, with a certain kind of humble strength about him. And I ask on your paper, why do you think it took courage for Jairus to do what he did here? And I've given you a couple of clues. One, what about his position?
What? Well, you know, the son of the leader, some of them were actually trained to.
All right, they either already were or they soon would be. The feelings are getting stirred up about Jesus already. This man is the ruler of the synagogue. In Mark's record, I notice he's called that several times. I didn't count them up, but maybe as John read, you noticed that's after his name is mentioned, then from then on he's called the ruler of the synagogue. So in a Jewish community at that time, that was the most influential position you could have. You were respected, you were known, you were influential in that way. So why, in view of his position, did it take courage for him to do what he did? All right. He went in the middle of a crowd as the ruler of the synagogue and fell at Jesus' feet, which indicates, is he thinking about what are all of these folks going to think? Well, he's thinking about his daughter and what the Lord could do for her. Nothing else is on his mind. There's a humility here, you see. We talk about humbling ourselves as if it were a particular action. Humility, however, is not measuring how highly or lowly you think. It's just not thinking of yourself. He's not thinking of himself. It takes courage to do that. Now, what about, why did it take courage for him to do this in view of his daughter's condition?
There was very little hope for his daughter. She was
gone. All right. And where would you insist ordinarily on being at a time like that? All right. Right there with her. This man had the courage when his little daughter, as he calls her, is at the point of death, to get up from there and leave the house and go out to the seaside where the crowd was and fall down at Jesus' feet. And I would say that is an uncommon kind of courage, because you're basically surrendering what's most precious to you, or committing what's most precious to you, to his judgment and care. And that's a remarkable thing. Now, here's some of the indications of manhood in his actions. You know, I was thinking and working on this, how much the view of manhood has changed just during my long lifetime. It's getting longer. We have gone from, I said in a sermon recently, from John Wayne to John Stewart. In our view of what manhood is now, and I think there's some confusion about that. And you can look at Jairus in this case and see some of something that I think is important. Number one, who went to Jesus to ask for help? All right, this is a man who went himself. I mean nothing by this other than an observation, and Johnny will know better than any rest of you here what I mean by this. We have people that this congregation helps with food every week. Johnny, how many of them are situations where the guy sits in the car and sends his wife in? In the community where Barney and I grew up, if all of the men in that community who are members of the church would be there and take a lead, that building would not hold them. Their wives go. And this man went himself to the Lord, and in that way he's a lesson. Secondly, he went in behalf of his daughter, in behalf of her. And in a world where so many men operate on the basis of self-interest, that is a lesson. He's thinking about someone else. And then he implored earnestly, implored, by the way, what does that suggest to you?
Begging.
All right, begging to me, pleading, insisting. He implored earnestly for help. I don't know about your situation, but the typical man of my generation at least the ones I know best, the one I look in the mirror at, I will drive all over town for an hour and a half before I'll stop and ask for help. Are you guys like that?
No.
You know, you're not that way? Well, at least I am. Okay. Okay, thank you, David. Okay. I think especially it is hard for us to ask for help in places where we kind of recognize that we may not be able to do it ourselves. And this is manhood. Now, anybody else with an observation about the humble strength of this man, Shauna?
Well, it's not just courage, it's faith.
All right, right. Faith and courage often go together, and they sure do here. Man, what would it take to fall down there and ask, come to my house, and believe it would make any difference? When you know that Mr. and Mrs. Jairus would already have done everything they could have to help this daughter, and nothing's worked, Ruth.
I'm thinking desperation. I mean, when I get desperate, I know that
God
is bringing things for me.
You think that faith is there, but there's also an element of there's nowhere else to turn. And maybe sometimes we do turn to the Lord when we have nowhere else to turn. I don't doubt that. But in this case, this is this man's most precious relationship. And he had to leave her in order to come and do this. So that suggests some faith, I think, in this as well. All right, how does Jesus respond to the humility of Jairus? And I like Luke's description of this again, Luke 8, verse 42. All right, it just says, in the ESV at least, John, how's it put it?
For he had an only daughter, 42?
Yes.
For he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying.
All right.
And Jesus went to people.
All right, now that's what I like. As Jesus went. Luke doesn't say Jesus got up and went after them. The crowd just says as he went, as if it was a given that Jesus would go do something like this. He would take an interest in a concern like this brought to him by this man. All right, now, we won't have time to spend as much time on this next one as I wanted, but Jairus is a man of gentle patience regarding life, and once again, I'm going to speak to us men in this class for a second. You have made your way in this urgent situation to the Lord. There's a crowd around, but you fall down before Him and basically entrust to Him the fate of your little daughter. And obviously there's some urgency and some desperation to it here. And by a wonder of wonders, he just heads towards your house. He goes. But then there are all these other people crowding around. Verse 24, thronging about him and doing what? Slowing him down. They want him to. And then there's this woman. And she has this, her situation is sometimes called the parenthetical miracle, as if we ought to study about her, because she matters to the Lord too. And he deals with her in a way that where her faith is brought out before the crowd and where his own disciples learn something about it. If you look at the other two accounts, you feel for her because she's dealt with this 12 years. She's spent everything she had. And rather than getting better, she what?
Got worse.
She got worse. That had to be frustrating to her. She tries to have this dealt with without any attention being called to her. But her faith needs to be honored. It needs to be brought out. So Jesus deals with her. So all of this is going on. Now, fellas, how would you have dealt? Were you Jairus? would this have been a case of road rage?
It would have been hard to not grab Jesus by the hand and say, we don't have time, we can go.
All right, yeah, we've got to get over there right now, so come on. I ask first. Get in line, everybody else, something like that. And maybe we would have even, you know, I paced the floor just waiting for supper to get done. And you notice how famous our culture is right now for that kind of rudeness and impatience with other people. But what do you not see or hear in the accounts of Jesus' dealings with this woman? You don't hear Jairus. You don't see any sign of frustration on his part or anything like that, Chatty.
To me, it shows that if he had enough faith in the first place, that he thought he could do something. It didn't matter how long it took to get
there. All right, good, good, good point. That and that kind of points us to what I, the questions I have down here. Can you think, excuse me, of any reasons why this man might have been able to wait through that inconvenience? With some sort of quietness about him. Chatty, I think, laid her finger on the point that I see here about his attitude toward Jesus. If you believe in this man enough to think he can go to your house and raise your daughter up, then you have to believe that he'll know best how to deal with this interruption. I mean, we run the risk of knowing what we need him to do, but wanting to tell him how to do it, don't we? And in this case, Jairus kind of lets him do it how he knows to do it. All right. What about his attitude, his thinking about this woman? I mean, really, when you look at her action and you boil it right down to the nub, what about this woman? What's she doing in relation to what Jairus is doing? She's doing the same thing. She needed help too. All she's doing is trying to seek help from the Lord in the least intrusive way that she can. And Jairus maybe can have some patience with her because she needed grace just like he did. Ruth?
But she didn't intend to take any time.
No, she didn't. That's what I mean. The least intrusive that she could be. But her faith was still the issue, and Jesus stopped and dealt with it. Brenda?
Jairus probably left his wife grieving at home, too.
Mm-hmm. At least he left her very, very concerned. We know that that must have been the case. About his understanding of himself, see if you see what I see in this. I don't know. It looks to me like that he's already done everything he can do about this anyway. So he's not trying to force the issue any further. Now, move along a little bit. Jairus is a man also with a pretty steady faith in the Lord. What occurred in these following three instances that might have made a man of lesser faith waver a little bit? Let's look at Mark 5:35 first. What happens here that might have made an ordinary person waver in their belief? All right, they brought him news. And they came from his house, and really tactful, thoughtful message. Your daughter is dead. You ever have any messengers who encourage you like that? Don't bother him anymore. So that might have made him think, well, it's over. It's too late. Nothing we can do now. Karen?
Do you think Jairus, when he went to Jesus, he was seeking Jesus to come and heal her?
Yes.
Not raise her from the dead.
Right.
And so when he got this message, everybody didn't really realized that Jesus could raise him.
And that would have been a discouraging thing about this, to just say, all right, you can't heal her now because she died. She's not just sick. All right, what about Mark 5:38? What is there that could have caused faith to waver? All right, you get there, and there's all this commotion, Mark says. All of the weeping and wailing and grieving. And I've read in some cases that in the Eastern world at the time, there would be organized mourners whose job it would be, apparently you comforted people by making as much commotion over the loss as you could, as if to say your daughter matters this much in our community. And they're on the job already when he gets there, and all this commotion. And that would be the opposite of a hopeful situation, wouldn't it? No, there's no thought here. Jesus hasn't raised somebody up from the dead and all of that. There's no thought about that. What about Mark 5:40? All right. That's what I see. The laughter, the ridicule, the idea. When hope is suggested in a situation like this, your daughter is not dead but sleeping. They ridicule it. Is anything more discouraging to faith than ridicule? I think in some levels, we are more afraid of ridicule than we are of actual physical persecution. And not to be too tough on us, but once again, where men are concerned. I think that's the case here. And any of those could have been, to an ordinary man, could have been the end of it. I just asked two questions on your paper just to think. How did Jairus feel in the face of these events? Hopeful, encouraged, like he was a humble, great man who had shown great faith. We're not told how Jairus felt.
I know that Jesus kept trying to reassure him by the words he did speak. And so you notice that Jairus still let him go in. You still took him to the house. So.
And you get the idea, at least I do, Sandy, that the Lord saw that he needed some reassurance in this, or he wouldn't have said the things that he did. He needed some guidance. So he felt like anybody would feel. That's my point, I think. What did Jairus do? All right, he kept on going with him. Keep on going with him. Keep on going with him. Listen to him and so forth. And that kind of is the other thing. He's a man of thoughtful respect.
Well, I also think one thing is that he didn't argue.
All right.
He didn't say, well, don't trouble yourself. You know, it's too late.
Right.
He didn't try to talk the Lord out of it.
Right. That fits perfectly for what we want to end with here. I think I heard the first bell there, so I probably feel the urgency with this. Notice how in each one of these cases, what Jesus does is what Sandy said. He has some guidance, some way in which his authority is to be respected. In verse 36, what did he tell him? All right, Luke adds, your daughter will be well. Don't be afraid. Only believe your daughter will be well. And in Mark 5:39-40, why are you making a commotion? That's as if to say this is inappropriate. Stop this. The child's not dead but sleeping. Mark 5:43. All right. Note it, and here's the reason I put this down. Notice that Jairus is not the kind of fellow who, once his daughter has been raised up, he doesn't want the Lord telling him what to do anymore. That's an important point. Jesus told him, give her something to eat. And that would show she's really alive, by the way. After Jesus was raised up, he ate before his disciples, you remember, to show that he's really alive and really him. And in this case, that happens. And then not to tell anybody. Why?
His time did not yet come.
All right. What happened in John chapter 11 when he raised up Jairus, when he raised up Lazarus? And everybody knew about it. All right, that's when they decided, if we don't get rid of him, everybody's going to believe in him. And it wasn't time for that. So that's why he tells them to tell. All right, what details do you see in this miracle that tell us something about the nature of a miracle?
Well,
I know,
actually raised somebody from the dead.
All right, first, this is way beyond my back was hurting, and it's not hurting now. Or I had a limp in this leg, and I can move it now.
Or even a flow of blood.
This reaches even beyond the veil of death, and he brings her back, right?
Well, I see a contrast because the woman with the flow of blood, her healing was all about her faith, because there's all these people touching Jesus because of her faith. She's
right.
Healed. Damsel, she's dead, so it has nothing to do with her faith. That she's healed.
Oh, that's a wonderful point, and it's a powerful point, because people who believe in faith healing or whatever say, if you believe enough, this will happen. And this girl couldn't believe. She'd already died. All right, another thing is, notice just with his word, he takes her by the hand and he says, Talitha kumi, or damsel arise. Peter uses this, by the way, with Dorcas over in Acts chapter 10 or something very similar. Just a word, no big show or anything like that. And then Luke says she got up at once, and then she was able to eat and walk, gave her back to his mature family. Why did the presence, is that the second bell?
Yes.
I don't think y'all know the answer to this next one, and that's why you're telling me the bell rang. Appreciate y'all being with us. I hope everybody has a great week. I hope this encourages your faith in some way in our class today.